Today on the Inland Journal podcast, school levies in Washington and the continuing debate about the costs of public education. Last year, the Washington legislature approved a significant shift in funding for public schools. Lawmakers added more than $1 billion to school coffers by increasing the state property tax. At the same time, they tried to lessen the burden on school districts and their local taxpayers by putting a cap on the amount districts could seek through local property tax levies. The goal was to make school funding more equitable across the state and to satisfy a state Supreme Court that had for years chided the legislature for not providing enough funding for basic education. The move was known as the McCleary Fix, named for the plaintiffs in that case. The result was that many school districts received significantly more money, some received less, others remained at about the same level. The Supreme Court signed off on the plan, and many lawmakers breathed a sigh of relief, happy to have that burden off their shoulders. Now, a year into the new regime, the legislature is revisiting how the McCleary Fix is playing in local school districts. At a recent Senate committee hearing, one superintendent told his district's story.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you so much for the opportunity to address you this afternoon. My name is Wade Smith. I'm the superintendent of Walla Walla Public School in southeastern Washington, a district of about 6,000 students. To provide a little bit of context, I just want to give you, again, a glimpse of Walla Walla Public Schools and how this unique change and historic changing in educational funding affected our school specifically. So looking at a school district, we lost about $7 million in levy as our roughly $3.50 levy was now capped at $1.50. That took off about $7 million in levy and LEA funding. In the meantime, the state, through the increase in funding through McCleary, brought in about $7 million back to backfill that. And so we are the epitome of what you've maybe commonly referred to as the levy swap. You took money from one pot and you gave money back at the other pot and really had a base zero increase net sum of new additional resources to pay for what the state now qualifies as basic education, as well as all of the other programs and activities our historic levy paid for. We were one of the first districts in the state to offer a school district-sponsored preschool. We are very proud of our music and orchestra and band and choir and have a really world-renowned alternative high school that's been featured in the movie Paper Tigers. All of those funded out of our, of course, levy dollars. And the challenge is, as new state resources have trickled in, they've been very department subject-specific. Money specific towards special education, which I will tell you today is woefully underfunded to date, but also monies that are targeted to LAP, to career and technical education, and to many other categorical specific programs that I can't use to pay for preschool, alternative high school, or all the music programs, because that was historic levy. But now that has come back through a state. So if you look in the front page of the graph, I think the two red lines that show the proposed funding under current McCleary laws, and then you can see the historic red line going up that speaks to, I think, Senator Hawkins' initial conversations of the state has done work and in trying to increase additional resources to fund the inflationary costs and other appropriate programs to offer our students in our district. And the reality of Walla Walla Public Schools is I think we have a great relationship with our negotiated unions. We negotiate, I think, one of the lower increases in salaries I've heard across the state, a 3.5% increase for our teachers, again, because of the lack of resources now available to pay for teachers because of the levy swap or the imbalance of how 2242 and its later 6362 affected the district.
Wade Smith's story was similar to those told by other superintendents. Many of them are supporting any or all of three new bills that are designed to allow their districts more options to supplement their state money with more local money to fund some of the programs not deemed as basic education by the state. Those are things like school nurses and mental health counselors and band. Some lawmakers are pushing back, including East Wenatchee Republican Senator Brad Hawkins.
When I think of equitable is I think whether a student lives in my district in Brewster mm-hmm. or Bellevue, mm-hmm. that student should have access to the same basic education. Mm-hmm. And one of my concerns is when we think about significantly increasing these local levies, that's when we create this significant disparity across the state of Washington for all 295 districts, and we're not protecting that student in Brewster or yeah. Bridgeport. And the Bellevues and the others are able to do more and get yeah. a better education.
Then Hawkins pressed Wade Smith about why the Walla Walla schools needed more than what the state allows from local taxpayers.
So your school district, Walla Walla, received $70 million. It was your budget 2016-17. Mm-hmm. And under current law, it's it's almost 78 million. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? So when I look at your numbers, and I understand what you're saying, I appreciate that, but help me understand, because you increased $8 million to your budget, mm-hmm. and your property owners are going to see a decrease in their levies from $3.50 per thousand to $1.50 per thousand. So I would imagine the property owners are very happy, but your school district, if I'm understanding this right, is getting extra revenues, and then the property owners are going to pay significantly less. Mm-hmm. Is that bad for your district?
From a property owner perspective, the 2242, 6362 McCleary bills were a real boom for our property taxpayers. Obviously, a significant $2 per thousand levy rate decrease, although roughly a dollar per thousand increase with the state tax. So roughly $1 per thousand savings net for property taxpayers. The challenge, as you pointed out, Senator Hawkins, is that $8 million over 4 years, but $6 million of that $8 was targeted specific money. Money for LAP. I couldn't supplant. I had to hire additional teachers with additional LAP dollars that couldn't be used for all of the programs. And so I would echo really quickly what Superintendent Rakedahl said, that I think the legislature did yeoman's work on trying to create equitable opportunities in equitable district for equality across their districts. The challenge I see is when people, you mentioned equitable basic education, but my constituents think that middle school music and high school marching band is part of basic education. Levies have funded that historically. Now with this levy swap, the resources simply aren't there because they are targeted, these additional monies, towards these, compartmentalized resources that can't pay for the marching bands and the middle school musics and those high school chemistry classes that our community has come to determine as basic education and have historically supported through years of levies.
The Senate Early Learning and K-12 Committee approved one of the three bills and sent it to the Ways and Means Committee, the Fiscal Committee, and the Senate. The debate was revived on Monday with superintendents lining up again in the Ways and Means Committee to support it.
I'm Jerry Lewis, superintendent of the White Sand Valley School District, located in the Columbia River Gorge. We serve approximately 1,300 students. In 2017-18 school year, we were fiscally sound. We had just passed a three-year levy with great support from our community. We were about to expand programs and services under the current legislation. We're facing a $1.25 million shortfall during 2019 and 20. This is due to a 40% loss of our levy and levy equalization, regionalization, and high staff mix. We support this bill. We see it as the only avenue we have currently that would allow us to survive without making devastating cuts to our program and staffing that would have a deep impact on our students.
Lewis's comments were echoed by other mostly West Side superintendents. But there was skepticism, especially from Ritzville Republican Senator Mark Schessler, who had a laser-like focus on one particular issue. In this case, he questioned a trio of school officials.
You told us the size of your budget difficulties. How many dollars in each district did you increase employee compensation by in the past school year?
I'll start. Can I start?
This is Tacoma Superintendent Carla Santorno.
I believe our increase in compensation was $9 million, but it's important for me to say that we have already covered the compensation that we gave our teachers by cutting central office. We cut 23 point something million in the fall. We have already covered our compensation.
Schessler didn't seem appeased. It was a question he asked of several other school officials. Many districts signed contracts with teachers providing for double-digit salary and benefit increases. Some later said it was probably more than they could afford. Then Centralia Republican Senator John Braun, who was one of the lead negotiators of the McCleary fix, took his turn to express his frustration.
This raises significantly more local, potentially raises significantly more local levy money than we had when the state inappropriately relied on local funding to cover basic education. We've had it happen twice in our state's history, one with Dorn in the late 70s, early 80s, one with McCleary in 2012. So now we're coming back and we're going to raise it even higher, substantially, almost twice as high, more than twice as high as it was prior to the over-reliance and the ultimate McCleary decision. What makes you think that somehow, when we failed twice at this in over-relying on local levies, raising it even higher, we will not screw this up and once again fail to fund schools at the state level?
It should be said that not all school districts support raising the local levies. One is the Spokane School District, whose Superintendent Shelley Redinger says she and her board have been discussing this quite a lot.
You know, we have big concerns about raising the levy lid. Again, that kind of goes in the face of everything that McCleary was about. McCleary was really about equalizing that, about making sure that basic education is funded from the state, and that is the responsibility of the state, not the local taxpayers. So this raising that levy lid will actually put us right back where we were, where that's going to fall back onto the responsibility of the local taxpayers. So we're concerned about that. We think that there should be other ways the state looks at funding some of these positions and funding school districts that doesn't cause it to go back to the local taxpayers.
So how have the changes in moving funding more to the state property tax, how has that affected the way that you can use your budget?
Well, and that's a very good point as well. So right now, with the cap, it's causing us also to have to relook at some of our positions because we really truly didn't get the full funding from the state. They did a good job making sure to fully fund compensation, and we're happy that our teachers are being paid competitively. But where they haven't done a great job is special education. Special education is still not fully funded. That's about a $7 million gap for Spokane Public Schools, so that's significant, and that's annually. And then also there's the new state benefits. And again, that right now, very large price tag, and right now the state's not looking at necessarily fully funding that, and that's a huge concern as well. In addition, the McCleary decision and the state, they're only funding at this point K-3 class sizes, so there are no dollars flowing into districts for class sizes for 4-12. That's also a big concern. So nurses, counselors, mental health therapists, security officers, also these are not being funded from the state. So basic needs, there's still a big gap there.
Were these things you had anticipated from when the legislature ended last year with the McCleary fix, so to speak?
You know, it happened so quickly at the end, and so it took us, after they made all the decisions, kind of to figure out where Spokane sits in terms of all of the decisions. And we're actually on a list of about 23 districts that didn't fare particularly well. And part of it's the way that our funding flows to us. There's something called LEA. Also, it was affected by our tax base. Another school district like that would be a Tacoma, for example. Also, there's something called regionalization, where we get a percentage, and you know, we did not get a very large amount. A lot of eastern school districts did not fare well with that.
Why is that?
Just because of the regionalization was based on your tax base. And so it's very variable. So you can pay teachers quite a bit more on the west side than the east side.
So is this, in watching the legislature talk about all these things, LEA is also levy equalization, mm-hmm. is it not? All of these incredibly, at least to the outsider, complex things, how difficult is it to write a new budget for 2020?
For our school district?
Yeah.
It's going to be a challenge. We've been working on it. We have a great team working on it, and I think that will help us. And we are in contact often with legislators and the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction on our concerns. And so we will make sure that we do everything to make sure that we have strong programs in Spokane Public Schools, keep the high level of excellence that everyone expects. So we'll have to look at doing some things a little bit differently in order to do that. We're looking at our central office expenditures, making sure we can make adjustments where it makes prudent sense, and then we're trying to, as much as possible, avoid any kind of major reductions at the schools. We'd rather do that in other ways.
It sounds like in the letter that you've put out that it's, as you're doing with me, you're trying to you're trying to get the public ready for this. We may be coming for cuts in some very difficult situations. Do you think it's going to be worse rather than better? What kind of feeling do you have for how it's all going to turn out?
Well, what we really want to do is start making really thoughtful decisions now, and that and really involve the community with us in terms of what are the priorities and what would our community like to see, and so that we're doing this all together with our constituents and our stakeholders. So we just started the thought exchange and opened that up. That will be available for 2 weeks to really hear from staff and families, community at large, what they think should be the priorities for our budget. And then in the meantime, we will continue to work with our legislators and with OSPI to make sure that we get that additional funding that we so desperately need. Special education, again, is one that I really stands out as a lot of unfinished business there.
Is this earlier than you would usually start your discussions with the public about a budget?
No, this is about right in line. We usually start working on the following year's budget in October, so we have started looking at numbers, but we do wait. We're heavily dependent upon our revenue numbers, and so we wait for the state to get those. So those are still coming in. There's a lot still in flux as we're fine-tuning the numbers, and of course they're working in Olympia with finalizing the revenue that will come to school districts as well. So we make all types of different models about what we think will be coming and predictions, and then how it will look for Spokane Public Schools. We're fortunate our enrollment looks like it will stay steady and increase a little bit, and that's very important in helping us meet our budget and balance our budget as well.
We had one or two senators who were asking some really difficult questions about the raises that were given to teachers all around the state last fall. Do you regret being that generous with your teachers?
No, you know, the compensation was long overdue for educators in our state, and it's real important that our educators and our staff in general is competitive. You know, we want to hire the very best people, and when we have districts all around us offering different raises, or even Central Washington, Richland area, the Tri-Cities area, it's important that we stay competitive. And I do know that when the legislators and the legislative bodies gave the money to the districts, they believed that compensation was a big part of the McCleary decision. What they're failing to do at this point, though, is the rest of the story, is what are you doing with these other areas to help school districts stay whole?
So do you think that this has opened up a whole Pandora's can of worms, or is this just an adjustment that came after McCleary? Is it a difficult adjustment, but just an adjustment, or does it kick off a whole round of new questions about education funding in Washington?
You know, I think that we have to go back and the legislators working with educators and be very methodical about what going forward, what can this look like going forward? And I do think that's going to take some work, and I think looking at some certain areas and to have more of a long-term plan. Because if we're not alone, Spokane Public Schools, if you look around the state, there's many districts in this situation and they're looking for a long-term solution. So I think OSPI needs to come to the table and help lead through this in terms of sustainable budgets. The budgets will all go to OSPI for approval, and so I think we need OSPI to really take the leadership role and help make some good decisions in Olympia about sustainable budgets for our school districts and the long-term plan.
Does it help not having the Supreme Court ruling sitting over the top of you that kind of has been driving the legislature to say how should we handle this and maybe not handling it in the right way?
You know, that's an interesting question. I do think that it is concerning that there are pieces of it that I think even the Supreme Court missed, like the special education funding and the long-term support for compensations. I do think everyone needs to come back together and work together on the long-term plan. And so even though there's not a lawsuit, I think if they raise the levy lid, we're going to have McCleary number two. It's exactly what we just tried to avoid, and that's why we're not for that. For one, it's not good stewardship for our taxpayers, and number two, it just flies right in the face of that McCleary lawsuit and what it was about, that the state should be funding basic education. Class sizes is a concern. I do think that because the class size initiative was passed by the voters, but it has not been addressed by the legislature, I do worry very much about class sizes going forward, that we are going to need to have supports there.
Are you talking about K-3 or then 4?
4-12. 4-12, yep. So that's something that I'm concerned going forward, that the McCleary decision was really only addressed K-3.
Shelley Redinger is the superintendent of Spokane Public Schools. The district is asking parents and others to go to the district website and fill out its questionnaire to help it make priorities as it writes next year's budget. This is the Inland Journal podcast. We go now to Coeur d'Alene to meet a high school student who has created a phone app to help people with reading problems. Morgan Dixon's app is called Out Loud Reader, which gives you an idea of what it's all about.
I started in March of 2017 with an idea to help my brother with work and schoolwork. So he wanted to take his college books and put it onto his phone and listen to it while he was working. So that idea developed through 2 years and working with the SBDC Small Business Development Center. And now we are here today with this cool app that's definitely helping students, and that makes me feel really good.
When he felt it was ready for testing, Dixon contacted teachers around Coeur d'Alene to see if they'd try it. His message found its way to special education teacher Melissa Mello at the Sorensen Magnet School.
He said, I'm a Coeur d'Alene High School student. I created this app. It helps kids who are struggling with reading. And if you want me to come to your classroom, I'd be happy to come. And so I emailed him and I said, absolutely, come and show us what it is.
So the app takes a photo of an article of text and then digitizes the work and then reads it out loud. And that's where we came up with the name.
One of Ms. Mello's students is fifth grader Tristan Slaughter. He has some difficulties reading. He holds an iPad on which the app is installed directly over a book he recently began.
Oh, The Land of Stories. I've read a little bit of it, not a bunch.
The app takes a picture of the page of text and begins translating it.
He quickly bent into an overly pronounced I wasn't expecting anyone from the palace bow. No apology necessary.
We're working in my classroom on actually decoding words and reading fluently and comprehending. But there's times when these kids really want to have access to bigger books, longer texts, more complicated vocabulary. And so this just gives kids immediate access and independence, which is great.
She's only had access to the app for a few weeks. She likes that it's easy to use, and so do her students.
It's all relatively new, but it's really exciting, and I'm hoping to use it with more students. Right now, it's just been my fifth graders that have had access to it, but it's on my classroom iPads, and I know that some of my other intermediate students would also benefit. So there may even be something where we have the fifth graders teach the fourth graders.
There's plenty of development to continue. As you saw, there were some errors. I want to add in a font, actually, a dyslexic typeface that helps students read. And so hopefully that will be coming soon, as well as document detection for people who are totally blind so they can figure out where the text is on their screen, and then it'll automatically take the photo.
Morgan Dixon charges $3.99 for the app to help him pay the development costs, though he has given Mello a free version to share with her students. He's also making it available to other schools in Coeur d'Alene and elsewhere who are willing to try it. Thanks for joining us. To find and subscribe to the Inland Journal podcast, search for Inland Journal in iTunes, NPR One, or Google Play, or find it on the Inland Journal page at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Tell us what you think of the program by sending your thoughts to InlandJournal@kpbx.org, or you can leave a recorded comment at 509-232-6904. I'm Doug Nadvornik.